call our county board meeting to order and ask the clerk to please call the roll.
Smith.
Smith here.
Smith here. Udell.
Udell here.
Udell here. Veldren. Veldren. Weigleitner.
Here.
Weigleitner here. Weigand.
Here.
Weigand here. Welsh.
Here.
Welsh here. Yang. Yang here. Andre. Andre here. Blazewicz. Blazewicz here. Betcher.
Betcher
here. Bollig.
Bollig here.
Bollig here. Brower. Brower here. Chavla. Chavla here. Collins is excused. Doolin. Doolin here. Downing.
Downing here.
Downing here. Doyle. Doyle here. Eicher.
Here.
Eicher here. Engelberger. Engelberger here. Erickson is excused. Freeze.
Freeze here.
Freeze here. Glazer.
Glazer here.
Glazer here. Gray. Gray. Huselman.
Huselman here.
Huselman here. Jackson.
Jackson here.
Jackson here. Kemp.
Kemp here.
Kemp here. Kigea is excused. Croning. Croning here. Marin.
Marin here.
Marin here. McCarville.
McCarville here.
McCarville here. Peters.
Here.
Peters here. Peterson.
Peterson here.
Peterson here.
Posler. Posler here.
Posler here. Ritt.
Ritt here.
Ritt here. Rose.
Rose here.
Rose here. Rylander. Rylander here. And Miles.
Miles here.
Miles here. We have a quorum.
All right. Thank you. And with the quorum being present, we'll move on to our next item, which is the Pledge of Allegiance. So if you please rise.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under the Constitution, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Okay. Okay. Next, we have special matters and announcements. Anybody with announcements? Supervisor Yang.
Yes, thank you, Chair Miles. So typically around middle October until the first week of January, all over the world, Hmong communities are celebrating our Harvest Festival. And we've done this festival tradition for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's a festival that celebrates not only our culture and the brightness in our clothing and our food, but it's also an opportunity for young people to network and young people to meet from different villages all over. But here in America, we've turned it into something that's even broader and more celebratory. And so in regards to that, I would like to invite every one of you guys to the Madison Hmong New Year, which is happening this Saturday and Sunday, 2nd and the 3rd. And also, in addition to that, I'm going to read a personal invite from the Wisconsin Hmong Association, who leads this every year at the Alliant Energy Center, and from the chairman, G. Hall, inviting every single one of you guys to join us. And this is what he says. Dear members of the Dane County Board, on behalf of the Madison Hmong New Year Committee, it is my pleasure to extend a warm invitation to you all to join us for the Madison Hmong New Year celebration. This annual event will take place on November 2nd to 3rd, 2024 at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison, Wisconsin. And we would be honored to have your presence as we come together to celebrate and share the rich cultural heritage of the Hmong community with our broader community. This is a very special event because we are embarking on our Hmong community's 50th year in Dane County. Your involvement and participation in this event will be invaluable for us, and we hope you can join us. Our opening ceremony starts on Saturday, November 2nd at 9 a.m. And then we will have a banquet where we award our community leaders who have made a significant impact this year. Kind regards, G. Tao, Chairman of the Madison Hmong New Year. In addition to that, I would personally like to invite you all to the ribbon cutting ceremony. I will be there at 8:30. So if you do plan to attend, please email me and let me know so I know to expect you there. I'm looking forward to also giving you a personal tour of my culture and our festival and the things that we do. So please let me know if you would like to join. I would love to have all of you guys there. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Rose.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and good evening, everyone. Big stuff is happening on the far east side of Madison in my district and other colleagues' districts today. The East Park Medical Center saw its first clients. This is a $459 million project, the largest in the entire country over in the East Park area, with the intention to consolidate services so the citizens of Dane County no longer have to hop from one building to the next. It will focus on oncology and women's health, as well as gender-affirming health care and proton therapy. Before, people had to travel to Chicago or Rochester for that therapy. It is now centered here in Dane County. And tomorrow, an invite out to all of you, Shorewood Behavioral Health will be opening in my district. This is a center that will focus on substance, mood, and thought disorders, as well as Alzheimer's and dementia for the geriatric community. It adds 120 beds to what was previously about 100 beds for behavioral health care here in Dane County. So we've doubled the size in a few years. That is tomorrow at 12:30. And again, as Supervisor Yang shared, if you'd like to attend this event, just let me know. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Chavla.
Thanks, Chair Miles. I just want to wish everyone a happy Diwali. Diwali is this Thursday. It is a Indian and Hindu and actually multi-religion. It's like a festival of lights. We celebrate good over evil, light over darkness, and knowledge over ignorance. I also want to thank Governor Evers for acknowledging Diwali this year and having a Diwali celebration. And we should see them all across the country. So I know the days are getting shorter, and sometimes it feels like the light is just not there. So please join me this Thursday, maybe just lighting a candle and celebrating what is good in this world. Thank you.
Also.
Okay. Completely different celebration, right? All right. Anyone else with announcements? Otherwise, I have a couple. First, the combined campaign has started. It started last week. I think we'll have Josh Schroeder will send out an email with information about how you can access information about how you'd like, you know, any contributions you'd like to make and those preferences and so forth. So watch out for that email. And a reminder, Wednesday is our evening for budget deliberations, and just want to alert everyone, if you don't already know, there will be a Harris campaign event that day as well. I think it's later in the day, so just keep that in mind and make your travel plans accordingly. Give yourself plenty of time to get here. Also, in that regard, anybody wishing to introduce a floor amendment, just a reminder that those requests would need to be in by 10 a.m. tomorrow so that the public could be notified. If you have a desire to introduce a floor amendment, please use the form that we've been using so far for requesting amendments. So, all right. I think that covers my announcements. So we'll move on to the next item on our agenda, which is public testimony regarding the 2025 budget amendments as proposed by Personnel and Finance Committee. So just a bit about the process here tonight. For everybody's information, the board will be taking no action this evening. This is an opportunity for us to receive input from the public, their comments on the substitute to both the operating and capital budgets. Each speaker will be allowed up to 5 minutes to address the board, and I will call your name in the order of the registrations, and then we have, let's see, 5 registrants wishing to speak. So after each of the speakers are, or after those 5 speakers provide their remarks, I will ask if there are any questions of any of those five speakers after that. So with that, if there's no questions, our first registrant is Sean Burke, wishing to speak in opposition.
Thank you. My biggest concern is the reallocation of $2 million that was unspent from the hotels to housing fund. That was direct aid to the homeless to get them into housing, and that's where it does the greatest need. My understanding is that money is being reallocated in bulk to the tenant resource center to essentially cover people's salaries.
Excuse me, Sean, that's not part of the budget proposal. Those are separate resolutions. So the reallocation.
I'm just talking about in general. This is about the budget, correct?
This is about the 2025 budget.
Right. This is part of it. Am I going to get dinged for this?
I'm just informing you that it's not germane to the budget proposal.
It's in the budget. I know it's in the budget. One of the supervisors informed me of it.
The resolutions are amendments to the 2024 budget, and they'll be before the board on this November 7th.
Well, that's not what I was told.
The reallocation of ARPA dollars are the 2024 budget.
Well, but it's in the 2025 budget. That's what.
No.
Okay, so I was misinformed then.
I'm sorry, I'm just informing you, but if you want to...
Well, that's fine.
If there's anything
what I do have a concern about, though, is the excessive pay that nonprofits are getting for administrative fees. Urban Triage, which we all know, the CEO gets $290,000 base salary. Catalyst for Change, which is supposed to help the homeless, has a budget of $1.6 million. $1.1 million of that is salaries. Very little of it actually goes to the homeless for help. But what it is going for is going for trips and expensive lifestyles for these CEOs. And then, as somebody who's unhoused, I have an issue with it. I have an issue with the CEO taking an entire board of directors to Puerto Rico for 5 days to a luxury vacation at an adults-only resort with, by the way, a former member of this board, and then continuing to get contracts. I'm tired of this board not doing their job and vetting these contractors. There are serious issues with the RFP responses from Urban Triage, and yet the board sits back and does nothing. I am tired of the homeless being disregarded. This week, a gentleman at the hotel where I'm at, this United States veteran, could not get into the county's hospice program because they didn't consider him homeless. For days, he had to sit in the hospital, slowly dying, until they could get him into hospice for a day and a half, where his family wasn't able to say goodbye because they couldn't get over there because he was transported to Fitchburg. There's not enough in this budget to help the homeless in direct services. We need a bold plan, and we don't have it. We have Band-Aid solutions. And I've extended this opportunity to all of you, and I'll do it again. If anybody wants to know what it's like to be homeless, try it for a week. Try it. I emailed all of you this past week another gentleman who sleeps underneath a tree every night in the freezing cold with a sleeping bag and a tarp. But what happens? The money goes to nonprofits, CEOs, so they can live lavish lifestyles. This is insane that we're subsidizing a group of people. I've actually reached a point where Dane County is in the business of poverty. You guys are actually financing an industry surrounded around people's poverty. And there's been no accountability, no questions, but I can tell you what has happened. I have been badmouthed, belittled, and trash-talked. And I can tell you that Supervisors Blazewicz and Rylander have expressed concerns about the high cost in a text message exchange between each other that I got through an open records request. But yet everybody's silent on it. We have people with master's degrees and JDs. We have a soon-to-be member of the assembly. We have social workers. We have teachers. We have everybody you can think of. And nobody's come up with a plan to figure this out. Because I've been told by members of this board, that's not my committee. That's what I've been told. It's not my committee. Well, the homeless in your community
about 30 seconds.
Are your problem. They are the people you're supposed to serve. And if I may be so bold, this board has failed the homeless, not just now, but in the last few years, giving it money to political allies for the benefit of them. And I'm sick of the poor being profited upon. I'm sick of it. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Brian.
What? Oh, I guess nobody has questions.
I said I'd ask after all the speakers.
Oh, sorry. Fine.
So, Brian Tesher, wishing to speak in opposition.
Thank you, Chair Miles. Thank you to the members of the board. I want to be very specific. I'm only speaking in opposition to one portion of Res 144. And that is PP&J 07. There's nothing else that I saw in Res 144 that I have a specific problem with, but PP&J 07 is a big problem for me. Should we really be looking at eliminating two deputy positions? This past weekend marks the second time this year that we had three shootings in Dane County in one weekend. The first was back in June, 7th, 8th, and 9th, and then this past weekend we had two men shot at Sabor's Fusion Grill, one person shot at a gas station in Pleasant Springs, and shots were fired in the Westtown Mall in the afternoon on a school day. In addition to that, October 7th, there was a shooting on the east side and nearly 80 shell casings were recovered. On October 13th, shots fired on Thompson Drive, nearly 20 shell casings recovered. Some people will say that the crime that we are experiencing here in Dane County is the result of addiction problems or mental health problems. My experience in 26 years in law enforcement and as the president of the Dane County Deputy Sheriff's Association is that incidents like that is not the result of addiction or mental health, it's gang problems. Now that might be the result of drugs, but it's still not someone who is just robbing someone for their next fix. This doesn't seem like the time to be eliminating or downsizing positions in the sheriff's office. The budget amendments in Res 144 call for an increase in operating expenditures of over $1.35 million. Even with offsets from increases to shared revenue, the increases to those expenditures are over $760,000. The same amendments call for an increase of 8 full-time positions in various county agencies, while calling for the elimination of 2 deputy positions. Our deputies are working long hours, weekends, holidays. They are increasingly being denied the ability to take much needed time off because there is too much mandatory overtime. They are missing out on family events like birthday parties, anniversaries with their spouses, kids' sporting events, plays, concerts, and more. Some will say that eliminating these positions aren't taking away from anyone's jobs today because they are vacant. Let me point out that the only reason these positions are vacant or on the vacancy list is because of an oversight in submitting the appropriate requisitions. It is my understanding that positions are not listed on the vacancy list if they are actively being recruited for and the appropriate recs have been submitted. So with our sheriff saying that he needs all of these positions and that he is actively recruiting for them, it seems like the board could easily remedy a paperwork oversight by eliminating PP&J 07 from Res 144. The two vacancies that are under threat of elimination are part of 31 current vacancies in the sheriff's office. All of these are required to be filled with overtime. Taking away these vacancies may not take anyone's current job, but it will prolong the overtime issue that we have been experiencing in the sheriff's office for the last 26 years that I've been here and longer. The sheriff will no longer be able to recruit for 31 positions with the elimination of these two. He will only be able to recruit for 29 positions. And upcoming retirements, of which our, captain of administration has indicated that within the next 2 years, half of our command staff will be retiring. The sheriff's office is already more than $1.8 million over their allotted overtime budget for the year. The sheriff didn't ask for any additional staffing positions in 2025. He worked diligently to stay within the mandates of the county executive, despite increases in workload for the sheriff's office. So, as I said at the beginning, I am not opposed to those 8 new positions. I think that all of them are worthwhile proposals. I think every one of them would benefit Dane County and the citizens here within Dane County. Sorry. What I'm asking for is if we can find a way to create 8 new positions and spend over $1 million, can't we also find a way to keep 2 deputy positions? My hope tonight is that you will all have the courage to stand up for the brave men and women who risk their lives and sacrifice so much for you and every citizen in Dane County. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Renee Livingston de Tien on Zoom. She promoted, sorry. Renee will be followed by Joel Gailey.
Hi.
Oh,
my apologies. Sorry.
Go ahead.
My name is Renee Livingston Deteen. I am a member of the HHN Opioid Settlement Subcommittee. I am not here representing any homogenous opinion of that subcommittee, but I do think it's an important piece of information. I want to begin by thanking anyone involved in that subcommittee because honestly, the appointment to that subcommittee and the chance to serve a community that's really important to me, a community of people that use drugs, have used drugs, will use drugs, continue to use drugs, or are seeking pathways to wellness without being able to have a vital voice in these monies, those people aren't represented, and I'm one of those voices. The reason I wanted to speak tonight is because I've become aware that there's a line item to the 2020-25 budget that would sort of allocate some of the proposed monies from the opioid settlement subcommittee to the Perry Family Clinic. And I am certainly not opposed to us targeting our funds to much needed populations, which definitely includes populations of color, which I know primarily that organization serves. I want to see the same accountability that we've invested in so much of the work that we've been doing in that opioid settlement subcommittee. I realize it's an advisory committee, but I think we've made magic in that committee by people of disparate views and temperaments coming together and really finding workable solutions to help people who use drugs in our community or who have been affected by the overdose crisis. And I want to see that money go through the same accountability process that the rest of the monies that we've been discussing and making recommendations on have. So I really hesitate when I see a line item of directly budgeted monies in that department. And I think it's really important to make sure we're not siloing services and we have oversight and accountability and communication between the agencies that are doing this work so that we are best serving the populations that we need to. So I would ask that line be reconsidered and removed, or at least an RFP be created for that process, so that certainly the Perry Family Clinic Agency could apply, and so could other public agencies that would also be able to fill that niche, so that we really have public health and other people involved in the accountability process. I think that's all I have to share tonight. I really appreciate your time in listening to me, and I wish you a good evening.
Thank you. Next registrant wishing to speak is Joel Gailey, to be followed by Melvin Jouett.
Members of the board. I would like to just kind of reiterate what Renee said in opposition of the same exact thing. I just want to read this real quick. We must define harm reduction. The failure to do so has been at the core of the ongoing trend of dilution of harm reduction philosophy by programs as well as individuals who cast it aside while employing harm reduction methods. It takes more than syringes and Narcan to rise to the challenge of harm reduction. What is harm reduction? Broadly, harm reduction is a philosophy that recognizes risks of harm from various behaviors and phenomena and aims to reduce those risks. Harm reduction philosophy recognizes that despite risk, humans will engage in behaviors that benefit them, and that all people deserve safety regardless of behaviors, not in spite of them. So what else? Harm reduction also recognizes the systemic origins of the harms and potential harms and aims to reduce them at the systemic level rather than just the individual. Harm reduction philosophy is applied in practice in the context of sexual health and people who use drugs, health, and safety, but also exists at the intersection of housing, healthcare, anti-carceral, justice reform, and other strategies and other struggles. Harm reduction in the context of substances. In the context of substances and their consumption, harm reduction philosophy is applied in a collection of practices. These practices range from education to safer use practices to voluntary treatment for problematic relationships to substances. We have people who use drugs to thank for the bulk of these methods, and we must always remember that they frequently came about through illegal means with the understanding that protecting each other was worth that risk. An important thing to keep in mind is that there is no division between harm reduction and recovery, nor is there any antagonism between the two, as, again, voluntary treatment is a harm reduction method. When we talk about harm reduction, we should always frame the goal as reducing harm and not what others think should come next, which is often what we see. Think about condoms. We do not hand out condoms hoping people will one day be monogamous or abstinent. We do it because it reduces the risks associated with sex. In their advocacy, people often dilute the practice, or at the very least, the message of the aforementioned in order to gain approval. Because of this, many people have advocated for harm reduction with slogans like, dead people don't recover, which I have done a lot in my speeches, or framed harm reduction as a pathway to treatment, which a lot of people do. This ignores the fact that the vast majority of people who use drugs don't need recovery, as the vast majority of people who use drugs do not develop problematic relationships to substances, but all people who use drugs benefit from harm reduction. And what I think of when I think of harm reduction and I want to see harm reduction is there's lots of people in this community that could probably rise to the challenge. So I think that everybody should have an RFP. It's just smart. It's just the way things should work. It's just, I don't even know why I'm here. It's just a no-brainer. Any money that goes out to people should be, you know, released as an RFP for the best person to get it. And if it is the Perry Family Clinic, then they deserve to have it. If they write for it and it's good, they should get it. If somebody else writes for it and it's better, they should get it as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Next registrant is Melvin Jouet.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening. I'm here in support of the PP&J amendment to the budget for two positions for the Deferred Prosecution Program, a position for the Clerk 3, as well as a position for Deferred Prosecution Case Manager position. And I just want to say that these roles are critical in providing direct service to program participants that's going through our diversion program, including, you know, staff management, enhancing overall program efficiency. If you think about the diversion program, our deferred prosecution program is where an individual has been arrested and charged with a crime can get diverted out of the court system. And then what we do in the program is we engage, educate, and activate individuals. We engage them on a level that's relevant to them, resilience by relationships, and how they see themselves in the community. So when you think about a lot of people who are struggling with substance use, mental health disorders, my program is the program that work with them as on the ground level. A case manager position, typically we have about, with my case manager, they probably have about 90 individuals that's on their caseload. So that's assuming a lot of people. When you think about these are individuals, when you talk about people that's dealing with mental health, dealing with substance use, dealing with housing, we work with those individuals to ensure that they get connected with the resources in the community so they can move forward and get the case dismissed. And so when you think about those positions, right now the positions are being filled by LTEs, and it's essential that those positions become full-time positions. With the one case manager who is an LTE, I mean, look at this person been in that position about a year and a half. However, that's not an accurate description of that LTE position, because that LTE, we have utilized that position for the last 6 years, you know, doing essential work, working with providing direct service to an individual who has been arrested and charged with a crime. If they complete the program with deferred prosecution, the case is dismissed and they don't get a criminal conviction. Then eventually they get taken off their record. So when you think about, they go through our program, you know, they make amendments for what they have done, and then the case can get dismissed. But then you think about after the fact, once that case get off CCAP, you know, that makes sure that going forward, that they can look at getting a job without having the adverse impact of a criminal conviction on their record. So I think, you know, I appreciate the PB&J moving it forward, that these positions was a part of the original DA's office budget, but that wasn't included. But then now we have an opportunity, and I'm really here to just say these positions are critical. If you're looking at the criminal justice reform and was a lot of discussion about happening in Dane County here, if you really want to look at reforming the criminal justice system, it's essential that you have a strong diversion program, being able to get people out of the system, giving them opportunity, we can hold them accountable, change behavior, and make them a possible repairing the harm that's done. You know, I think about when I look at this case managed position, deal with people who have, think about domestic violence cases, any type of felony and misdemeanor, so a wide variety of cases that we actually work with. And so I think that will help if you think about really changing. That's something that the more position we have in deferred prosecution, we can really engage, educate, and activate people and making sure that they are in our community. And so if they are not, if you get diverted out the court system, you think about what it does. If you start thinking about the jail system, these are individuals that's not in jail. They are in the community. We're working on what their needs are to make sure that they do not continue to get involved in the same type of behavior. So that's a big difference. I also think with deferred prosecution, we also ensure that if they go into our program, they have to pay restitution. The case manager and then the clerk three position, once that restitution come in, we send out that money to the victim. So I look at it in the last 7 years, deferred prosecution have collected over $900,000 in restitution. That's money that's being paid directly to crime victims to make sure that they can move forward and you know, get their life back on track. We also think with this case manager position, they're going to be working with treatment providers when they're making referrals out and following through to ensure that those individuals are doing what they need to do to make sure they do the things necessary to change their behavior. We also look at this person may have people do volunteer community service. And if you look at it with deferred prosecution, our community service is not punitive, but it's a way they can connect to the community. get a lot of people that feel like they're not a part of the community. Giving back to the community by having them do volunteer community service is essential to make them get connected with the resource in our community. And typically during a year, we probably have individuals going through our program have completed over 30,000 hours in volunteer community service. That's working directly with nonprofit agency that's in this community with them coming in giving back. So I just wanted to come in and just say, I appreciate PB&J moving it, adding these two positions in, and we're just really here to that's fine.
Sorry.
I'm done?
It's your time. If you want to just conclude your...
Okay, I just really want to, thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to speak here. And I just want to implore you to move this forward and vote to approve for these two positions for the Deferred Prosecution. Thank you.
Thank you. Right. Melvin was the last registrant on my list here, so let me just check to make sure if there was anybody else wishing to speak that didn't get the registration. Okay. Just wanted to check, and then let me check with my colleagues. Anybody with questions for any of our five speakers? All right. No one's registering that they have a question, so thank you all for your remarks and your input. And with that would conclude the public hearing on the 2025 budget sub as recommended by Personnel and Finance Committee. So if there's no other such business as allowed by law, is there a motion to adjourn? Moved by Glazer, seconded by Chavla. And if there's no objection, we'll be adjourned. But just a reminder again, 6 p.m. Wednesday will be our budget deliberations. And keep in mind the travel time, the events going on. So thank you all. We're adjourned.
Recording stopped.